When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're home alone. You have an uneasy feeling in the darkness. Like someone or something is watching you. Why is it suddenly cold in this room? You hear footsteps, whispers, or even laughter. You go to check. You feel a presence behind you, and then the fear sets in. I'm K-Town, and you're listening to Paranormal Fears.
My background is in, I guess, archaeology and folklore studies, and I've always been really interested in storytelling and the way that people, you know, kind of experience the world and then share those stories. And I've always been drawn to, you know, people's experiences with the supernatural and the unexplained. So my interest in it, you know, goes back to my childhood. You know, I was always really interested in unexplained phenomena and loved a good ghost story. And then, you know, as I progressed through my academic and professional career, you know, I really gravitated towards that kind of study of people's reactions to the unexplained. And then 20 odd years ago, 1997, I was a graduate student studying folklore at Memorial University in Canada, way up in the northeast corner of Canada. And I started a ghost tour business, leading people through the foggy, haunted streets of St. John's, Newfoundland. And from there, you know, it just kind of exploded. All the work that I was doing all kind of came together, both in terms of telling stories and then collecting stories from people who had, you know, strange experiences of their own.
Yeah, I do get that. It is intriguing and motivating. You know, once you start hearing these stories, I mean, you want to know more and more about them. I'm wondering if you were ever exposed to the paranormal, you know, at a young age. Maybe your house was haunted, someone's house in the neighborhood was haunted.
Yeah, you know, I grew up in one of those families that had no time for ghost stories or anything like that. Everything was very practical. My mom was a teacher. My dad was a chemical engineer. So, you know, logic and science were kind of the matter of the day. And I guess maybe in a way, my interest in the unusual maybe was a reaction to some of that. Certainly growing up, you know, ghost stories weren't something or paranormal experiences weren't something that happened in kind of my family. I grew up in Ontario, in kind of central Canada. And then in the early 90s, I moved out to the Atlantic coast, to the island of Newfoundland. And a very different kind of culture. You know, it's an old place, lots of little fishing harbors and lots of great old stories, you know, a really strong tradition of storytelling. And people were much more open about sharing their strange experiences. It was really much more a part of local culture and history and identity to be able to share some of those things. So I kind of arrived, you know, on the East Coast of Canada at a good time, I think, in my life. And realized I was in this place where strange things, you know, happened and people talked about it. And then I had, I guess, the I guess it would depend who you ask, the good fortune, I guess, to end up living in a haunted house here in the capital city of St. John's. So yeah, since I've been in the house, there's definitely been some strange sort of things that have happened here.
Really? You got to tell us. You can't just tell us that and then not tell us. Yeah. So tell us what happened.
Well, the house that I'm in is a row house, you know, so very similar to the houses in the row, very typical kind of house for the area in which I live. It was built in the 1920s, so we're probably around its 100-year anniversary, and it was kind of a working class neighborhood. You know, a lot of people who lived here were laborers or worked in businesses or factories or worked in the fishery in some way. And the house that I purchased, you know, I purchased it from a woman, and we had moved in, and we weren't here very long before the neighbors next door who live in kind of an adjoined side of our house, they figured out who I was and that I had this interest in ghost stories and strange experiences. And they said, well, I guess if anyone was to buy this house, it's appropriate that you did, and we can tell you this story. And so the very first story I heard about the house in which I live was about one of the previous owners. So two owners before I bought the house, there it had been owned by a couple. And it was one of these, almost a romantic story, I guess, in a way, and a tragic story in another way. They were born at a time where there were kind of deep religious divisions in communities. So one of them was Protestant and one of them was Catholic. And there was no way that their parents were going to allow them to be married. And they waited. They waited until they were in their 50s. Both their sets of parents had passed away before they married. And so they lived in this house, this couple. They lived there for a long time, but they never had any children because they had married late in life. And the gentleman passed away first. And then the lady of the house was one of these ladies, and I'm sure there's ladies like this in everyone's neighborhood, who love to sit in the front door of the house and watch all the business that happens outside. I'm sure you all know ladies like that. But one day, Mrs. Carroll, who is in her 80s, she still lives a couple doors down. She walked by, and our Mrs. Hunt, the lady who lived in the house, was kind of slumped over in her chair in the front door, and her neighbor thought she'd fallen asleep. Went off and did her business, got her groceries, whatever, came back, and here found Mrs. Hunt in the same position and realized that she had passed away, sitting there, you know, minding the neighborhood business, which was very appropriate. And because she had no family, the house was just locked up. It sat vacant for a year or so, or a year or more, and then eventually it was sold to the woman that I bought the house from years later. So in this time when the house was empty, the neighbors, because it's an adjoining house, our staircase is separated from their staircase by a wall, and when someone goes up and down the stairs, you can hear it. And one night, the neighbors woke up to what they thought was the sound of someone who had broken into their house. They could hear footsteps coming up the stairs. And the husband went out to, you know, to confront whoever this burglar was, and realized that the footsteps that they had heard were not coming from their house, but from the other side of the wall, this vacant house that it was had been locked up. And throughout that whole time, when the house was empty, they would often hear, you know, the sound of someone moving around inside this abandoned house. And then it was sold, and then sold later again to me. And so they were telling me this story. And so, you know, my wife and I, we kind of, you know, it was great to know this story, but we had never really experienced anything in the house. And then one night we were going out to a friend's birthday party, and my wife has a ring that had belonged to her late mother. It was one of those family rings that has a gemstone for the different months of the children. And it's, you know, kind of a prized possession. And she was getting dressed to go to this party, and she had taken it off and placed it on the corner of the bedside table, getting ready. And when she, you know, came back to put the ring back on, the ring had gone. It was vanished from the table. And so she looked everywhere and took everything off the bedside table, making sure it hadn't slipped under something else. Looked on the floor, you know, wondering if maybe it had fall into a crack on the floor or something like that. Couldn't find the ring anywhere. Off we went to this party. And she was so upset by having lost her mother's ring that she said, we got to go home. We got to go home early. And so we did, and we came home, and we walked in the house. And to this day, I don't know exactly why I said it, but I said, Mrs. Hunt, you know, give us back that ring. And when she went upstairs, there was the ring right on the corner of the bedside table where she had placed it originally. So from that point on, other sort of things start to happen in the house. And it has become almost a bit of a habit now in the house. If something kind of disappears in a mysterious fashion, or even just sometimes if I can't find my phone or my keys or whatever, we'll ask the resident spirit to bring it back. And she's very, very obliging. She usually brings it back. Sometimes she'll return things in unusual places, which is always interesting.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that before, actually. There was a guy that I interviewed. Actually, he gets paid to go to all these haunted locations because he works for a university in Alabama. Believe me, he has a dream, you know, dream position down there. But he said when he stayed at a bed and breakfast that some of the people that stay there, the jewelry be missing. And then they would oftentimes find it buried in the backyard. Just weird stuff. So they are literally speaking out to whoever. And most times it's brought back, but may come back in different places.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And you know, I think sometimes there is this, kind of Hollywood idea of what a spirit is or does, and, you know, and when we say to people, oh yeah, we live in a haunted house, people immediately think, oh, there's blood oozing from the walls or something like that. And nothing could be further from the truth. You know, we actually live with this somewhat friendly spirit. And a lot of the people that I meet who have had encounters of some kind with supernatural beings or the spirits of those who have gone on. The majority of those are actually kind of warming in a way. You know, one of the most common types of experience that I hear from people locally is what locally we would call a token or a fetch, where someone gets kind of a warning or a communication from someone around the time that they died. So it might be seen as a warning of someone's death, or it might be someone who has just passed away, and they will have some sort of connection. So a classic example, a friend of mine told me this story about his mother was home and alone, she thought, in their house. And this was in a little community about 15 minutes south of where I live. And her father-in-law had been ill for some time, and she came out into the hallway of the house, looked down the hallway, and here was this gentleman, the father-in-law, standing down at the end of the hallway. And she said, "Pop," she said, what are you doing here?" And at that moment, the phone rang, and she turned around. It was in those days when people had phones attached to their walls, and she picked up the phone, and it was her husband phoning from the hospital to tell her that his father had just passed away. And still holding the phone in her hand, she looked back out down the hallway, and he had vanished. So a lot of the stories I get are kind of like that, you know, someone coming back to maybe give a final message to someone, or to say farewell, or just kind of appearing around the time of their death.
Yeah, that is, and that's creepy too. Have you ever seen anything in your house, like something move actually physically?
Yeah. Now, other people have seen one of a former, we had rented out a room to a tenant at one point, and she experienced a figure of a woman. Her mother had come to pick her up and had said, "Oh, you know, there was someone in the window when I came to get you, someone in the rocking chair in the front room." That there, of course, there had been no one in the front room. So we think that was probably Mrs. Hunt, you know, up to her old business of spying on the neighbors. But there are multiple things that happen in this house. So the other type of spirit that we have that I've had multiple encounters with in our house is a ghost black cat. And it's and we have a number of animals, but we don't have a black cat. And I have seen the black cat out of the corner of my eye. I have felt the cat brush up against the side of my leg like a cat will, and look down and there won't be a cat there. So yeah, we've kind of gotten used to having these somewhat friendly spirits in our house, some of which we see and some of which we don't.
That is interesting. So you're not scared one bit to stay there, or you haven't considered moving out?
No, and it's funny. Like people always say, "Oh, tell me the scariest ghost story, the scariest ghost story," you know. And I think I spend so much time listening to people's stories and researching stories that it takes a lot to kind of creep me out. Certainly, I think, you know, there's certainly something strange about having, you know, the spirit of someone deceased hanging around your apartment or whatnot. But it would take a bit, I think, to upset me. Though I have heard some some very disturbing local stories, poltergeist type activities for certain houses that that luckily we don't have in our house.
Really? Okay. So is that in your book or no?
Yeah, some of those are. Some of the stories that we hear are, you know, a little bit creepier. You know, one of the ones that I find, I guess, delightfully creepy. We have a lot of sea-related stories here because we're an island and we have this long history of fishing and shipping and whatnot. And so,
well, you know what? Before you go into that, and that's great, I want you to tell me, like, give us a visual for what the island actually looks like. I mean, is it a true island separated?
Yeah, it's quite large. So it's way out in the middle of the North Atlantic. We're closer to Ireland than we are to the other side of Canada. You know, Canada is such a spread out country. And it's pretty rocky. You know, it's pretty far north in some ways. We're right out there. The Labrador Current comes down from the north. So right now, actually, around this time of year, there's lots of icebergs and things like that. And the main industry here was fishing. So like codfish. People came over from England and Ireland pretty early on to, you know, work in the cod fishery and lived in tiny little isolated villages. And so lots of time for strange stories to accumulate. So yeah, it's kind of a rocky coastline. Some of the coastline is pretty rough. So just hundreds upon hundreds of shipwrecks that happened over the years, which lend themselves really, really well to people having strange experiences. And it was, you know, it was one of these spots that was way out in the North Atlantic. So during the Second World War, the Americans came and they built a lot of bases here. There's a big airport in the center of the island, Gander, that was really an important, you know, spot during the Second World War for ferrying aircraft and whatnot over from North America. One of these kind of creepy sea stories that's in one of my books is about family who had a family member who was lost during the Second World War. His ship was torpedoed, and the body was never found. You know, he was lost at sea. One of the members of the family told me about how the spirit of this sailor would appear at the bottom of the stairs and walk up the staircase, and he would be dripping wet, and he would leave puddles of water behind him. And it was a Roman Catholic family, and he would get to the top of the staircase, and there was a little spot there where there was a little statue of the Virgin Mary, and he would climb up the stairs and he would stop for a moment as if he was praying in front of the Virgin Mary, and then turn around and walk back down the stairs. And the puddles of water would evaporate behind him as they walked down the stairs. There's something very creepy to me. I don't know what it is, like the idea of those puddles of water just kind of disappearing or somehow for me creepier than the actual ghost himself.
Yeah, that is crazy. Okay, so this is a true separated island, and it is considered Canada.
Yep, absolutely.
And so have there been any type of, you know, like tragic events in that little place or?
So many. And so many shipwrecks. You know, there's one of the stories I cover in the book is about a very famous kind of shipwreck. And the ship was called the Blue Jacket, the SS Blue Jacket. It was a steamship, and it carried passengers and mail. Like in those days, I guess, there weren't really roads that connected the communities. Everything went by boat because it was an island. And the SS Blue Jacket was one of these mail coastal steamers, and it caught on fire. Most of the passengers and crew managed to get to safety, but there were two people who did perish: a woman, a passenger, and I think one of the crew, one of the engineers or something, perished in the fire. And ever since then, people have had encounters. They've seen this flaming ship, you know, kind of sailing into port. I did an interview once years ago with an older woman from one of the communities in that bay, and she said, "Oh yeah, it was nothing for people to see the SS Blue Jacket kind of sailing in, wreathed in flames." And it is one of these stories that actually kind of persists. I did an interview with a gentleman who didn't see the Blue Jacket, but he had been out fishing, and you know that nowadays everyone has, you know, technology to help guide them, GPS and radar and sonar and all that kind of stuff. And it was very foggy, and he had to keep adjusting his course because he kept coming up on the radar. There was another boat, and then the boat just kind of vanished. And where the boat vanished was in the area where the SS Blue Jacket had been lost. So even now, with kind of our modern technology, people are still encountering these strange things.
Wow. Okay. So that's why I was asking, because I'm wondering if you guys have ever seen any like ghost ships or anything like that. That's why I was asking.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a really famous ghost ship as well that's not too far from here. There's a ship called the Isle of Skye. There was a family who, I guess, they were originally or had some connection to the Isle of Skye in Scotland. And so they had named this fishing schooner after it. And the story I've heard is that they would go even further north. They would go up to Labrador and fish in the summer, and they'd be there all summer, and then they'd come back in the fall. And this one year, the youngest son of the family, he had been ill and couldn't go off with the family, so he stayed back with his mother. And well, his father and his brothers went off on their schooner, the Isle of Skye. And then in the fall of the year, one night he kind of looked out and he could see the schooner had sailed back into the harbor. It was around the time of year when the boats would come back. And so he said to his mother, "Oh, you know, the family's back. I'm going to go out in the little rowboat and row out and bring them in. And you put on the kettle and we'll have a cup of tea when everyone gets in." And he got in his little rowboat and rowed out. And when he got out into the harbor, there was no schooner there at all. The schooner had vanished. And so this was in the days before, you know, telegraph or telephone. And a word came back a couple days later that the Isle of Skye had been lost in a storm somewhere further north, and that everyone on board had perished. And so what he had seen was kind of the ghost of his, you know, the ship with his father and brothers on it. And that ship returned, you know, kind of every year people would have strange experiences around that time. And people actually began to recognize that it was a warning that a storm was coming. When the ship would appear in that particular harbor, people would know, oh, that means there's a storm 3 days north or a couple days north, and it's going to come down and hit here. And so people would, you know, prepare for a storm. So yeah, it's kind of interesting how this story about, you know, a ghost story has kind of become almost a way of kind of predicting weather or predicting the future, you know, that this ghost, they kind of come back as a warning to protect the living in some way.
That is interesting. I love ghost ship stories. I don't hear enough of them. So yeah. Thank you for sharing that with me. I want to know, are there more in your book? I mean, the book we're talking about is called Haunted Shores, True Ghost Stories of Newfoundland and Labrador.
There are so many ghost ship stories. I you know, I really could do a whole book, I think, just on local ghost stories. Lots of pirate stories too. That's the other very common thing.
We mean like ghost pirate paranormal
ghost
stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we think of, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean sort of stuff, but during the 1600s, you know, there was so much shipping around the North Atlantic, you know, between, you know, Boston and New York and England and Scotland and Ireland. They didn't have the big gold Spanish galleon kind of treasure, but they were easy prey, and they were also a really great source for pirates for labor. You know, you needed, if you had a pirate ship, you needed someone to sail it, and all these fishermen that were working out of Massachusetts and Newfoundland and Nova Scotia, they made really good captives because you could put them to work, and they knew how to sail properly. So yeah, there was a lot of raiding on shipping throughout the Gulf of St. Lawrence and all along the northeastern coast. Yeah, lots of stories of pirate treasures that are buried. There's a famous story from the west coast of the island about a pirate, you know, coming ashore and burying treasure. And then the standard story is that they would then kill one of their crew members and bury the body down on top of the treasure to leave a ghostly guardian to guard that spot. That's kind of a recurring story that I hear in many, many places across the island. And sometimes they're associated with really famous pirates. There's another ghost spot where there's supposed to be a treasure buried under a pond that was buried by Captain Kidd, who was a famous Caribbean pirate, North American pirate. And and the pond is said to be haunted. And there's a story of a group of men that went out to try and drain the pond, to pump the water out of the pond to get at this treasure. And a terrible storm kind of whipped up out of nowhere with thunder and lightning and strange noises and drove them off. And so people have been reluctant to go and try and plumb the depths of that pond and get the treasure for themselves.
Oh, really? Wow. That is so interesting. This is awesome. I want to ask you also, we're going to jump into your book here. There's one that I saw. It's called The Bathing Beauty of Clark's Beach.
Clark's Beach. Yeah. So yeah, this is an interesting story. It's interesting you should pick that one because it's one that I keep finding more information about. And this is a story that this is the community where my wife is from. And it was a tiny little community. It was a logging town, like a lumbering town. There were lots of sawmills and they made barrels and for the fishery and all that kind of stuff. And there was a train line that went through in the 1800s. And then eventually the train, you know, that line was abandoned. But the old track is still there. And the trestle that kind of crosses over the river at the north of the community is still there. And the story is about these girls. So this would have been back in the 80s, I guess, that these young women had gone out to go. They were having a sleepover or something, and they were going to go swimming down in the river one night. And they went off down the track, and they got to the trestle, and there was this other girl kind of sitting on the edge of the bridge, drying her hair in a towel. And they got closer and they realized she was kind of wearing like an old fashioned bathing suit, like something that was kind of a little bit out of date. And she didn't say anything, but when they got closer, she took the towel down from drying her hair and turned and looked at the girls, and her eyes like glowed kind of bright red in the moonlight. And those terrified girls ran back home and found out later that the local story was that there had been a girl who had gone there many years before to meet her boyfriend or whatnot down by the river. They were going to go for a swim. And when he didn't show up, she took to the waters herself. And there can be quite a strong undertow right there, depending on how the tide is coming in. The flow of the river can kind of shift backwards and forwards. And she drowned in that spot alone in the darkness. And so people say it's her ghost that still haunts the trestle. So I collected that story, gosh, maybe 20 years ago. And interestingly, it's one of the more persistent kind of local haunting stories that I get. A couple of years ago, I was doing a project with high school students in the area, sending them home to collect stories. And two different kids came back with versions of that particular story. So it is a spot that people continue to have strange experiences with this bathing beauty over North River. And the railway track itself is supposed to be haunted. There's been a ghost train that was reported along that section of track as well.
Really? Like, are they hearing it come through there?
Yeah. So there was a gentleman who was kind of walking along the track one day and a train came roaring through, you know, and it was a steam locomotive. The track was rumbling and you could see the train and the smoke and the noise. And when the train went past him, there were all these passengers, kind of in old-fashioned clothing, just staring straight out kind of towards the ocean because the track kind of runs parallel to the ocean at that point. And off it went and went over that haunted trestle and kind of went up the hill and disappeared. And the man thought, that's strange, you know, that this train has gone through here because I'm not expecting a train, you know, like that. And he went to the train station, which was very close. It was one of these tiny little old wooden train stations. The building's still there. He spoke to the station master and he said, what was that train that just went through on the line? And the man said, oh, there's no train due through here this afternoon. And the man said, well, I just saw a train, you know, go up towards the next community. And so the man said, well, you know, he said that there what I didn't see anything. And, you know, there's nothing on my logbook that shows that a train is supposed to run through. So he called up ahead to the next train station and he said, look, there's a train coming, an unscheduled train. So clear the tracks. And the train never arrived, of course, at the next train station. And it was said that the railway workers along that section of line, that this was kind of a story that they were always kind of nervous about around that section of line, that branch line, that they were going to run into that phantom locomotive.
Really? Okay, so he actually saw it and heard it and everything.
Saw it and heard it, yeah, yeah.
Has he been the only one to report it, or have there been others to see it?
There's only one printed account that I've seen of it, but it is one of these kind of stories that live in local folklore. Yeah, I'd love to know if someone saw one more recently. I think that would be amazing to experience. I don't know if you're familiar with kind of the phenomenon of what in other parts of the world, they call a will-o'-the-wisp, you know, kind of a little ball of light that would appear and lead people astray. What some people call foxfire, you know, the kind of a strange glowing lights in the woods. And we definitely have them. And we actually call them by a very, it's an old word here that has kind of taken on meaning, a different kind of meaning in other parts of North America. And that's Jack-o'-lantern is what a local person would call it. Not Jack-o'-lantern, like the Halloween pumpkin, but Jack-o'-lantern, or sometimes just Jack the lantern. And this is a little ball of light. Some people would even call it a corpse candle, and it's a little ball of light. My late father-in-law, he saw one as a boy, and I've met lots of people who've had experiences with these balls of light, and they can be kind of mischievous. You know, they will lead people, you know, in down dangerous paths or over cliffs or into the bog or something like that. And they are somewhat persistent. Like they are another one of these things, and people are often kind of, I guess, reluctant to say that they're ghosts, but they do still occur. And I've met lots of local people who have had strange experience with lights. Sometimes some of the older sailors will call them weather lights, you know, that, oh, if there are certain sea conditions or if there is a storm coming, they will see these balls of lights and kind of take it as a warning. But there were certain harbors where lights would appear with kind of astonishing regularity. I know there are other locations like that in other parts of the world. I know there's some famous orb kind of sightings in places like Texas where these orbs of light appear over and over and over.
Yeah, the Martha, they seem Martha to be lights.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah. They definitely, there is some kind of phenomena that's happening, you know, and it's definitely something that occurs locally here, whether that be a supernatural experience or some weird kind of geothermal or magnetic energy or something, we don't know, but very, very common here to hear stories of what we would call Jack-o'-lanterns or weather lights.
Are they seeing those over the water, or where are they seeing them exactly?
Yeah. So both. The ones that kind of come and return over and over in the same spots, a lot of those seem to be over water. There are also accounts of those appearing over land as well. I found an old story that's in the book about a minister, you know, who was lost in a terrible snowstorm. And he was, I guess, out visiting parishioners or whatnot and had gotten lost in this snowstorm. And this ball of light kind of appeared. And he thought it was someone carrying like a lamp or a lantern of something, and called out to the person, but the person didn't answer. And so he just kind of followed what he thought was this person with his lantern along. And eventually the light kind of brought him to a fence post, you know, and a fence, and he was able to follow the fence along until he came to a farmhouse, and then he you know, was kind of saved, you know, and had a shelter for the night. And so this, in his memoirs, this minister had written out this story about how this strange little orb of light had saved his life in that terrible storm.
Are you talking about the water? I have to ask you about UFO sightings or something strange in the air. Has anybody reported anything like aircraft or something strange? This, you know, that's not a plane.
Yeah. So one of the interesting things that happened here, I mentioned how during the Second World War, the American military came up and set up a bunch of bases here. So there were a couple different American air bases, and I'm sure your listeners are familiar with the Project Blue Book that was started by the U.S. Air Force to kind of record some of these unexplained phenomena. There are quite a few that happened around some of those American air bases, and some of them quite early. You know, I think the first, where the term kind of flying saucer kind of came into use in the 1950s, there were UFO sightings here around the same time, and those persist. You know, every so often, you know, there'll be a report in the news of people seeing strange craft. I did a little video a while ago about a UFO sighting from the west coast of the island, about a, you know, kind of a flying disc that was spotted. And they are something that can keep kind of popping up. And there seems to be certain areas where those happen. There's an area in the center, actually close to where the SS Blue Jacket went down. There's an island called Belle Island that has all kinds of interesting, strange stories. It seems to be a magnet for supernatural activity. And it's one of the places in the province that probably has, you know, more UFO sightings than any other. And a lot of them are that kind of flying disc kind of shape, where that, you know, kind of moves erratically or moves at a speed or in directions that, you know, human spacecraft or human aircraft wouldn't be able to move. And one of the really interesting things that happened on that island was there was a strange event that happened where there was, they call it the Belle Island Boom. There was at one point, this was many years ago now, but there was a terrible sound, this enormous crash, booming noise. And there was a spot on that little island where there were these strange holes that had been punched into the ground. And I think someone's chicken coop got destroyed in the damage. And what was unusual is that immediately after it happened, the American military kind of showed up and shut the area down completely, not letting anyone from the island have access to it. And this was kind of during the height of the Cold War. And so there was this speculation that maybe it was some kind of Soviet weapons test, or the other very common explanation was that it was some kind of extraterrestrial experience that had happened there on the island, and very mysterious. Like, there's very little information available about what actually happened with the Belle Island boom.
Yeah, they were doing something. And I have heard those reports. I believe that Linda Moulton Howe was reporting on those mysterious booms some time ago, you know, years ago. And so that's pretty crazy. And they really think that that has something to do with them drilling, you know, some type of drilling off the planet for all these underground railways and stuff like that. So who knows what they're doing?
Who knows? Yeah.
Let me see here. There's something else in your book. I'm getting to it here. It's haunted pubs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have this great kind of Irish heritage here. So we lots and lots of pubs. And so you can't come to visit without ending up in one of the pubs here. Who doesn't love a good haunted pub story? There's a bar downtown St. John's called Christian's Pub. And it's one of the older pubs kind of on that street. I think it was one of the first pubs in that area. So it goes back, I think, probably to the 60s or 70s. And it has a persistent ghost. There are lots of stories about a ghost being seen there. And one of the stories I've heard about it, that in the pub itself, there are some of the benches that are in the pub are actually pews from an old church. There was a Congregationalist church that at some point was converted into condominiums, I think. And so all the pews were taken out and sold. And this pub, you know, wanting, you know, benches and booths, took a bunch of these church pews and brought them into the bar. And the ghostly experiences that people have had, there's supposed to be a ghost that they've nicknamed Maggie, who will appear or make herself known in the bar. And the explanation is that she came with the pews. You know, she's this very kind of disapproving, good church-going woman who has to spend eternity in a pub now.
That's crazy. I'm wondering if anybody's ever, you know, actually have any of the staff, you know, told you, I mean, you researched a lot of these hauntings, but as far as the haunted pubs are concerned, have they ever told you that they've actually physically saw something like fly across the room or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's a building that at the moment has a bar in it, but it has served a number of different purposes over the years. It was a bed and breakfast for a period of time. It has been a restaurant and a cafe and different types of drinking establishments. Right now, it's a bar and apartments, I think. And people locally call it Victoria Station. Like, if, you know, people of my generation, that's what they would know it as. That was one of the restaurants that was in the building. And the building, it's a beautiful kind of old Victorian structure, probably built around 1893, 1894, beautiful kind of Victorian architecture. And it was a doctor's surgery in its early history. There was a Dr. Cavanaugh who had a surgery there. And it is probably one of the local buildings that I hear more firsthand kind of experiences about than any other. And so I've talked to people who worked in the bar. One guy told me, you know, he was there cleaning up one night after the bar had shut down and watched. He was, you know, washing and drying glasses and stacking them on the bar. And one of these glasses, pub glasses, shot all the way down the bar so fast that it flew across and smashed on the wall at the end of the bar. And other people, one of the other gentlemen who had spent time in the building, told me a story that he had walked into one of the upper rooms in the building, and there are these old mantelpieces on the old coal fireplaces, and walked into this room, and there was a man standing at the fireplace, you know, kind of leaning against the mantelpiece, smoking a pipe. And he kind of took the pipe out of his mouth and kind of looked, you know, in, you know, surprise at seeing this person kind of burst into his room and then disappeared. So the bar at the time, they nicknamed that gentleman Jacob, and other people have had experiences with Jacob in that building. When it was a bed and breakfast, the city archivist actually told me this story that she had two tourists come in one day who had stayed in that hotel, and they came into the city archives because they had some sort of ghostly visitation that night, and they were interested in the history of the building. And so she told them what she knew about its history as a surgery and whatnot, and off they went. And she said the next day, this different couple came into the archives and said, oh, we're staying at Victoria Station. And, you know, we had this strange experience and we came to see if we could find out some history of the building. And she said, oh, the archivist said, you must be staying with that couple that was in yesterday. And the second couple had no idea that someone had been in just the day before them. So two completely random couples had similar experiences within a day of each other, and both had decided to try and get to the historical bottom of the building. So, yeah, it's one of those buildings that I kind of keep an eye on because it is one that I'm constantly meeting people who have worked there who have had direct strange experiences in that building.
Wow. And has anybody ever presented to you any type of photos or videos of any the phenomena that you think is credible or real?
Yeah, you know, everyone has photographs of orbs and various things. I locally know. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say I see so much stuff that I think I've kind of developed a bit of, even though I love this material and I'm passionate about it, I see so much of it, I think I've kind of developed a certain amount of skepticism or recognition about what is just a camera error or whatnot. There is a kind of a fairly recent story, though, that I came across about there is a wine vault on the main kind of street downtown. So this was a stone vault that was built around 1800, 1804, something like that, to store port wine. There was a company that was bringing port over from Portugal, from Oporto, and storing it in vaults and caves in Newfoundland to mature and then shipping it back to England. It's now a historic site. You can go in and they have, you know, poetry readings and there's, you know, historical plaques and all that kind of stuff. And they rent it out for events, and they had rented it out for a wedding reception. And this woman contacted me after the wedding reception and said, we got a ghost on. And here was this photo that they had taken as the sound person was kind of setting up the equipment or whatnot. And here was this this very kind of clear photo of this gentleman with suspenders and kind of a rolled up white shirt kind of rolled up above his elbows that was very much not a member of the wedding party. And it is a building that has had other kinds of stories. The people who have worked in that historic site have reported, you know, hearing footsteps. One of the kind of historical docents or interpreters, one day when she was locking up the building, she heard someone call her by name from the inside of the vault. And she thought it was one of her coworkers who had stayed a bit late. And when she went back into the vaults, there was nobody there.
Wow. this is amazing. And I know you got stories for days. I mean, your book is not, you know, it's not a little book at all. I mean, it's a ton of stories in here, some shorter and longer than others. How did you go about, you know, deciding which ones to put in your book? It had to be pretty hard.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's so many. I wanted to, for that particular book, I wanted to give people, I guess, a bit of a taste of things from different parts of the island. And I wanted to mix, because I'm interested in history, so I'm always looking for kind of old stories. But these are things that still continue on into the present. So I wanted to have a good mix of kind of old stories and more recent stories where I could actually, you know, go to those places or do interviews with the people who had experiences themselves. So yeah, it's kind of meant to be a taster of the haunted history of the province.
Yeah, I love it. I really love that. And there's one more I want to talk to you about, and that's called the Graveyard Ghost. Graveyard Ghost. It's towards the back.
Oh, yeah. Let me just think
Conception
about that one.
Conception Bay, Holy Road, I guess that's.
Oh, Holy Road. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a really interesting story about kind of the establishment of this cemetery that the parish in that community, there was a cemetery that had, I guess, kind of become full over time. And so the parish priest had decided, okay, we need a new cemetery on the south side of the community. And so the men kind of were called together to clear the land and to build a fence around this cemetery. And eventually, all the men had to go off. It was kind of in the fall of the year, and they all had to go fishing or whatnot. And so they kind of drifted away and went back. It was all volunteer labor. And there was one older man who kind of stayed back, and he was determined to see it through to the end. And so he was the one that kind of finished fencing in the area. This gentleman, James Curran, who was an Irish immigrant to the island. And possibly from that or maybe due to you know, other causes, he took sick and kind of, you know, started to fade, and realizing that his days were kind of drawing to an end, he called one of his friends and said, I want to be buried in that new cemetery, the cemetery that I helped build. And then so his friend went to the priest and said, oh, you know, James is dying and he wants to be buried in that cemetery. And the priest said, oh, well, it's not consecrated yet. Like, so he'll have to be buried in the old cemetery. And his friend went back and told James Curran that, no, the priest says you can't be buried in the new cemetery because it's not consecrated yet. And James Curran said, well, he better bury me in that new cemetery or I'm coming back to haunt him. And then passed away. And the priest, true to his word, buried him in the old cemetery, refused to bury him in the new cemetery. That was the beginning of kind of hard times for the priest, because the spirit of James Curran began to torment him. And there was one kind of memorable story about the priest having kind of been chased back to his home one night by James Curran. Curran's ghost, and being kind of led astray in the dark by the spirit, and then waking up his man and saying, okay, go get the men from the village, and we're going to go dig up James Curran. And so it was right before Christmas time. In the folk memory, you know, one of the gentlemen that told me this story has since passed away, but he said, you know, people could remember that it was raining bitterly, that kind of a bitter, freezing rain the day that they dug up James Curran, and they put his coffin on a cart and then dragged it to the new cemetery. And the weather was so miserable that icicles formed on the coffin as they were taking it to the new spot. And they went, and the priest blessed the cemetery, and they planted James Curran in the cemetery he had helped build. And apparently the priest, you know, was never haunted again, but people said that his hair had turned white from the experience that he had had being haunted by James Curran's ghost.
Wow, that's great. See, all he had to do was just do exactly what he told him to do first time.
Yeah, if someone tells you, I'm coming back and haunting you unless you bury, you fulfill my final request, it's kind of your own fault. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to do it. So this is awesome. The book is called Haunted Shores, True Ghost Stories of Newfoundland and Labrador. Dale Jarvis, my special guest. Dale, tell my listeners where they can find out more information about you or any other projects you may be working on.
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me online on social media, Dale Jarvis, on most social media platforms. More recently, I've taken to TikTok, telling short little ghost stories there, which has been a lot of fun. And if people want copies of the books, they can go to Amazon and just or their favorite bookseller, local bookseller, or they can go to Flanker Press, flankerpress.com, which is the publisher. And that book is there, and other books on local folklore and ghost stories.
Well, I hope to bring you back and do another show for us.
Absolutely. I'd love to.
Absolutely.
Lots of stories.
You have a ton of stories. I know they're in you. You have a menu. You have a menu, and I love hearing them. Thank you for sharing those with us. Dale, many blessings to you, and I really appreciate your time.
Take care.
Thank you for listening. I invite you to follow my other podcast, Mysterious Radio. Please share this show with others that are interested in the paranormal. I want to give a special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle, who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of four, I want to thank them as well. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Paranormal Fears.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Some people take the straight path in life. But at Arizona State University, we respect your twists and turns. They make our online students more driven to excel in their professional lives. That's why our personalized suite of services empowers you with innovative resources and staff that sticks with you.
Make your next turn with one of our 300-plus programs at ASU, number one in innovation for 9 consecutive years. Visit us at asuonline.asu.edu to learn more.